And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, a lot happened this week, and I think we can kind of sum it up with three names from Pennsylvania. Teddy Daniels, Scott Perry, Connor Lamb. The three different types, but one story, or at least an unfolding situation that they all play a role in, right?
Yeah, it seems that way. The current political unrest sort of gets epitomized by the way that these three have come out. Both internally with their own parties and externally in America writ large.
So let's start with the most local, Ted Daniels. What's his story?
Well, if
who
you remember...
Who is he?
Okay. Well, he's a veteran and an ex-cop and he... or a corrections officer, I don't remember which. But he... ran in the Republican primary last time to try to unseat Matt Cartwright. And he was unsuccessful. He got beat by Jim Bognet. But Daniels kind of represents that angry white male demographic. And he, right after Bognet lost the election, which, by the way, Bognet never really conceded, Daniels came out.
It doesn't matter, does it? You lose, you lose. You win, you win.
Yeah. And Daniels came out and said, I'm running next time, trying to get ahead of the curve. And
So, in other words, Daniels was more to the Trump right, more to the fascist movement than Bognet.
Yeah. And he went down to Mar-a-Lago, got his picture taken with Donald Trump. And, you know, he's been collecting money, but not big money. On this. He is from Lackawanna County, and he would be, I believe, the first opponent that Matt Cartwright would have from Lackawanna County. But a little over a week ago, he gave Matt Cartwright what I think is a pretty big gift. He came out and attacked the police officers who testified on that House committee that's investigating the January 6th insurrection. And he was pretty vociferous about that attack. And, of course, what's interesting is that... Well,
these cops are not really cops.
Well, that's the question. You know, how can people who claim to be part of the law and order party or the law and order movement then turn on fellow police officers? And you hit it. The only way they can do it and can solve that dissonance is by defining these policemen away and saying they're not really cops.
Okay.
It doesn't diminish the fact that there was an insurrection. But that's another thing that the Republican Party is trying to do is define that away. You know, that the people who were attacking the cops with the Trump flagpoles, the American flagpoles and the Confederate flags and all of that, that they are the real patriots.
They were the ones upholding the Constitution. They were the ones upholding the election.
Right, right. And, of course, it's all nonsense, but they've living in the bubble that they live in, and the fact of the matter is that you now have one political party in America that either refuses or is too afraid to stand up to them, The movement lives on.
Well, it's not that they, it's not that they refuse. They represent them.
Yeah.
They are the elected representatives of this group of people.
The authoritarian.
The new fascist party. Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys like, if this Daniels would get elected, that's who he's telling you straight out. I mean to support a drive toward fascist America. That's who I am. And that's who all of the people like him are. So now let's go over to Scott Perry, who is a sitting congressman, right?
Yes, from down the York area.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
he is also a Trumpnik, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and his contribution to this isn't what he's done in Congress so much. It's that he came up with a guy who he touted and Trump appointed to the Justice Department, who, as reports came out this week, apparently was going to lead the coup from inside the administration to overturn the electoral results of the 2020 election.
Yeah, this guy's name was Jeffrey Clark. He had
Yes.
been appointed and had served as the head of, in the Justice Department, the head of the division that deals with environmental law. The guy who didn't believe that there's a climate crisis. So naturally, he was in charge of environmental law. He was a
Correct.
lawyer for many, many years at a big Chicago-based corporate law firm called Kirkland Ellis. And even though he was there for many, many years, they never asked him to be a partner, which is
Yeah.
interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if he's really much of a lawyer, but he, you
Well, he's certainly
know,
an ass kisser.
right. Yeah.
So now, when Barr quit, and by the way, Barr also worked for Kirkland and Ellis. So when Barr quit, a guy named Jeffrey Rosen gets appointed the acting attorney general, also from Kirkland and Ellis. And then they appointed this guy, Jeffrey Clark, to be the chief of the civil division, which is a big step up, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, he had no experience for it.
No.
And one of the big mysteries was why Bill Barr quit when he quit.
Right.
And apparently, there were a couple of things going on at the time. People thought that it might have been related to what happened in Georgia. If you recall, when the Georgia recount and the regular Republicans down there, stated that the election was fair and the results were the results. There was, we had the Trump phone call trying to find 11,790 votes.
Right.
But also, mysteriously, the U.S. attorney for Northern Georgia suddenly quit. And so there was a question as to whether or not he was being pressured to do something which he knew was either illegal or unconstitutional. And that's about the time that Barr said, I'm leaving as well. And now, of course, we find out that there was this other in Washington, D.C. action going on with Jeffrey Clark. And what happened was he circulated a letter that essentially said that there were goings on that made this election look not kosher. And he asked some of the other U.S. attorneys to sign on to it, and they refused.
But
And
wait a
then
minute, but before he got to that point, it was even more bizarre. Don't forget, this guy was in charge of environmental law, right? Before he became the acting head of the civil division. Now, the rule of relationships between the White House and the Justice Department is they're not supposed to have contact. The
Correct.
Attorney General may have contact with the president, but nobody else is supposed to have contact with the White House. Now, this fella, Clark, petitioned for a meeting with the director of national intelligence. He wanted a classified briefing by the head of the National Intelligence Directorate, then this fellow John Ratcliffe, because he had special intelligence given to him by John Ratcliffe that showed that the Chinese had thermostats planted in different parts of America that were able to change the vote count in the computers. And he wanted to know whether the department, the National Intelligence Directorate knew about this and was prepared to act on it. White House agreed to give him that briefing, and they did give him that briefing, much to the shock of everybody in the Justice Department, all of whom were Trump appointees. It was in that connection that they then, all of the rest of them, signed the letter saying, if this guy goes any further, we quit.
Yeah.
What he was proposing was that they should dump Jeffrey Rosen, another Kirkland Ellis guy, who had taken over from Bill Barr.
Yeah.
So you're dealing here with lunacy upon lunacy, but with a high level of organization and at a very high level. Right?
Right.
It was in moment that Trump was saying to these guys, sign this letter, leave the rest to me and the Republican members of Congress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, just say that the election
Was fraudulent. Fraudulent. Yeah, based on this guy's estimation on special thermostats that the Chinese made.
Right. Well, this was the Trump MO. Remember, he went to Ukraine and said, just announce that you're doing an investigation, and I'll take it from there.
Yeah.
The same thing. He just wants the PR so he could drive home the point and forget and paper over the substance, if there is no substance there. I mean, you know, thermostats is one thing. They've talked about Italians with satellites doing some changes. And of course, in Arizona, they're talking about Chinese bamboo in paper ballots.
The Jewish laser beams from Italian satellites.
Yeah. Well, that's a different set of problems, but they keep coming up with these things that are so laughable and so outrageous, but they've got millions of people believing this.
That's right.
Millions of people believing this, and that included the insurrectionists January 6th.
That's right.
And then the question is, how do we meet this kind of a challenge, and who's going to meet it? And that gets into the Democrats, and you know, who right now by the thinnest of margins are controlling Congress.
Well, and that gets us to Connor Lamb. The third member of our Pennsylvania triumvirate.
Right.
I'm not suggesting that Connor Lamb is a fascist like these other two guys. Not at all. He comes up in the context of what you're saying. How do you meet them?
Well, and Connor Lamb comes from Western Pennsylvania, which has been trending more and more Republican.
And he's announced for senator, right? He wants to be the senator.
Yeah, but let's back up. He became a congressman out there in two very difficult elections. It's essentially that he was the only Democrat that could have been elected to that seat, given his background and his positions. If you had an AOC type of Democrat, they weren't even going to come close in that district. The problem for Connor Lamb, and this is an interesting problem, is that Pennsylvania, because of the census, is going to lose one seat in Congress. And the question is, where are they going to lose it? And Connor Lamb has a feeling that it's going to be his district that's going to get merged into two other districts. And so that leaves him kind of out. Or even if it wasn't, he would be in another very, very tough race and might not win it. The other district that might get changed and taken away might be one sort of towards the east central part of the state, might be a Dan Musers district, which includes parts of, you know, lower Luzerne County. We still don't know what the commission is going to come up to. But
if they're up to their normal ways, what they'll do is get rid of a Democrat if they can and merge that Democratic vote in overwhelmingly Republican precincts.
Well, that was the old style. The new one, this is going to be a commission that isn't going to do that. But the problem is they still have, they're going to lose one seat. And will it be a Republican seat or a Democratic seat? Where that matters, and I'm getting a little bit into the weeds, is the current Pennsylvania delegation is 9-9 Democrats and Republicans. It used to be 13-5 Republican until the state Supreme Court redistricted things. part of the plan of the insurrectionist wing, that the Trump plan, was to throw the election into Congress. And when it gets thrown into Congress, the House gets the vote. And the House votes by state. It doesn't vote individually where, you know, the Democrats would have a majority. And so Pennsylvania would be a deadlock state. It would be 9-9. They wouldn't be able to decide which way it went. But if you lose a Democratic seat, it would be 9-8 Republican. So Pennsylvania, even if it voted for Joe Biden by 80,000 votes or another Democrat by 100,000 or 200,000 votes, you could see that if the election were thrown into the House, Pennsylvania could wind up being put in the Republican column.
Because at that point, the representatives are not bound by the popular vote. They vote as they want. Democrats could have carried Pennsylvania. If it was 9-8 Republicans in the House, they would vote for the Republican electors.
Right. And the same thing's happened in Arizona. And that's one of the reasons that there's a fight out there. There are shenanigans behind the scenes to try to get the legislature to certify results that don't match the popular vote.
Isn't a feature of some of the 30 laws that the Republicans have passed on how to count votes, which they've passed in the last few weeks, isn't a feature of all of these laws that the legislatures can decide how to decide who won the election without regard to the actual vote count?
Right. And those are laws that are being passed. There's one in Georgia. And what they've done is they take away the power of people that they feel would not go along with this. So in Georgia, they've said that the Secretary of State no longer is going to be able to certify the count, that it's going to be the legislature or something along those lines. Arizona's trying that. And, you know, it's interesting. All of these laws are coming down. And there was an article that appeared within the last week or 10 days in the New Yorker by Jane Mayer. We'll refer that to our listeners, who traces this movement, this right-wing authoritarian movement, to mostly some very wealthy individuals, mostly the Bradley Foundation.
Who the hell company. Is the Bradley Foundation?
Well, it's a foundation that you know, were from a very wealthy family that had made their money in. I think electronic parts, the Allen Bradley Foundation, whatever. But they're right wingers, and they're, you know, they're the modern day equivalent of the John Birch Society, and they've been financing people. There's an attorney in Arizona to come up with these ideas and to push these laws and to do these things. So they've and it's very scary because what they're plotting to do is. It's not an outside coup. It's a coup from the inside and according to law. They create these laws, and then they act on them. This is the fascist playbook in a lot of places. It's what's happened in Europe, in Poland, and it's happening in Hungary at the same time. And it's noteworthy that this week Hungary came back into the discussion because one of the more prominent right-wing media figures, Tucker Carlson, has been doing a show from there and has been touting this fascist, neo-fascist, authoritarian regime, anti-Semitic regime of a guy named Viktor Orban. You know, they appoint their own judges to the court and they attack the press. Anything that will stop them, any institution that will stop them, they undermine or replace with their own. And and the question is, who is going to stop them? The founders had this idea that, you know, we might get a president that could be bad, but we would have people in Congress, the House and the Senate, who would act responsibly. Well, what we found out this, you know, over the last couple of years with regard to Donald Trump is the U.S. Senate is not going to do that. As long as Republicans can keep at least 40 members in the Senate, they're going to go along with whatever power plays there are, no matter how authoritarian or neo-fascist they are. And that's what's really scary. And also the Supreme Court, because on the court, you have people like the Chief Justice, John Roberts, and Clarence Thomas. And Thomas has been touting this idea of what they've been doing in Arizona. And Alito is likely to go along with them, saying that we're not going to stop this. You know, if the Arizona legislature comes in, if a Democrat carries the state by 100,000 votes and the legislature comes in and says, no, we're going to certify the Republican, the Supreme Court's going to say, that's what the law says. The Constitution says that it's up to the states, and the states have said, we're not going to honor the popular vote. That's a real, real worry. And the Democrats don't have a good handle on how to do this.
By the way, just talking about the Bradley Foundation, you know that your friend, the guy you've talked about many times, Art Pope, is the chairman of the Bradley Foundation.
Yep. He took over North Carolina.
With $2 million, he bought the North Carolina legislature. Yeah. That's right.
Years ago, we mentioned that.
Yeah. That's right. And that's who these people are. They're a bad group of people in terms of politics. They used to be concerned mostly with trying to get rid of public education. Their big thing was to substitute private education for public education.
And get rid of fluoride in the drinking water.
Right. And Bradley, the guy who set it up, was a founding member of the John Birch Society. So, I mean, these guys are extreme right-wing neo-fascist types from the word go.
Right.
That's who we're dealing with. Anyway.
So we have that. Yeah. And
the question I have for you is, getting back to Conor Lamb, can the Democratic Party be represented by the type of politician that Conor Lamb is and be effective in standing against the fascist Republican Party? Or will the fascist Republican Party be able to bank on racist populism to outflank the Conor Lambs of the Democratic Party forever? Which would, of course, mean the destruction of the Democratic Party.
Or will the Democratic Party go sufficiently to the left?
Well, that's the question, right?
But whether or not then they lose the Conor Lamb voters and have a very active and vocal core that is perhaps relegated to a permanent minority.
Would the Conor Lamb voter become a voter for the racist fascist movement? I mean, assume that that's where it breaks down. Assume for the sake of this discussion that in the face of a Trump-founded Republican movement, Republican Party, that is basically a fascist movement based on populist racism,
right,
whose substantive policies are giveaways to the corporations and the very rich.
Right.
Would Conor Lamb support that movement? I can't believe it. I don't believe that he's fit to oppose that movement, but I can't see him as a supporter of that movement.
He wouldn't support it, but without him there, his voters would support it. And we've seen this because he's from Western Pennsylvania, which has become more and more like West Virginia and Southern Ohio. And you've seen that those voters who used to be union members and still to some extent may be union members, but are separated now from their leadership in many ways. We note this week the sudden unexpected passing of Richard Trumka, the head of the AFL-CIO.
Another Pennsylvania guy.
A Pennsylvania guy who came from there. And all the problems he's had with union members voting for their economic interests. And you and I have been in the presence of local union members. And we've talked to them, who are local union leaders, who say, we can't get our guys, they would just listen to Rush Limbaugh all day, we can't get our guys to vote their economic interest. They're more interested in their guns. They're more interested in the social issues that the Republicans raise very successfully.
Well, in that case, there's no hope for America.
Well,
and there's no hope for the Biden program, Because the Biden program assumes that if the infrastructure bill gets passed, or when it gets passed, and when the reconciliation bill gets passed, the Biden and the Democrats will point to that success and say to the American people, this is what we did, vote for us. But if this is what we did isn't good enough, if you really have to be a racist, what's the difference? Why bother?
You're going to have to see, because if a lot of this comes from economic dislocation, certainly West Virginia, you've seen it in Western Pennsylvania, where these towns have been hollowed out. That's where John Fetterman comes from, Braddock. And that town has suffered, lost the steel industry as much as anybody else. Now,
is the lead campaigner right now.
Yeah,
right?
I still think he's the one to beat in the primary.
But if he's the one to beat in the primary, and he is a kind of Bernie Democrat, he's not a Bernie Democrat, but he's a kind of Bernie Democrat, then how do you square Lamb trying to go up against him when he doesn't support any of that kind of stuff that Fetterman embodies?
Yeah, well, I think Lamb is, I don't know. I think Lamb is going to have that problem. How do I... can I siphon enough votes off of the Fetterman base? Because Fetterman looks more appealing on the surface, just by looks, to the Lamb voter than Lamb may be. And also, can Lamb, make inroads where Fetterman already has inroads in the center part of Pennsylvania, and in, let's face it, our area. He's got some organization in our area, including up in Susquehanna County.
He polled when Fetterman ran for the governor's nomination. He polled an enormous number of votes, although he spent something like $10,000. Yeah. He came in second.
Yeah, and that's why I think he's the favorite. But, we had another election this week in Ohio, which the same conundrum was presented itself to the Ohio voters. You had a Bernie leftist versus a more centrist candidate. And the Bernie leftist was by far the favorite. She had a 35-point lead, and she wound up losing. And she lost because the centrist, Hillary Clinton, came in. James Clyburn, who's the kingmaker now in the Democratic Party, came in and said, don't vote for her. And she lost. I mean, she's a lady. She was so extreme that, she's one of these that the good is going to be the enemy. The perfect is the enemy of the good. She wouldn't vote for Joe Biden. She actually used an expletive to describe Biden after he beat Bernie. She was Bernie's woman in Ohio.
Right. But until the mainstream Democrats, until the Biden group and the Clinton group came in, and Clyburn came in and spent millions in the last 2 weeks, by the way. Yeah. She was favored.
She came out.
And she still got a huge vote.
Election.
She still got a huge vote.
Got a huge vote, but she lost a lot. She wouldn't even say whether she voted for Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you're a Democratic woman and you can't say that I voted for Hillary Clinton because you're so disappointed that Bernie lost, then maybe you deserve to lose.
Well, but that's not the question. The question is who represents the effective leadership against the fascist Republican Party. Is it Chantel Brown or is it Nina Turner who lost?
Well, we're going to have to see, because Chantel Brown's going to be in Congress.
Yeah, she's going to be in Congress, but that's not the point. The point is, what is the policy? What is the leadership that's required by the American people to fend off fascism? That's the point. Anyway, another point is, we're done with our time.
Goes quickly.
We can resume this next week. It isn't going away.
No, I won't see if the infrastructure bill gets passed or the left wing scuttles it, as they're threatening to do.
Well, we'll see what happens. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.